Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 404 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, my good man, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how are you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing good, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. Always better when you're coming through my ears without much disturbance in the background, which seems like it's going to be like that today. So hopefully things continue like that. Getting straight into the review part, we're going to start here with a card that took place on DAZN last Friday, July the 7th in Cintemex, Monterrey, Mexico. Over here, two fights to mention really on the card. Let's start with the main event. Diego Pacheco, now 19-0, a TKO for him in just four rounds against Manuel Gallegos, now 19-2 with a draw. I actually thought we'd see a few rounds here. Obviously Pacheco, I think, was coming off that win last time out, I want to say against Jack Cullen, and got in there with Gallegos. You know, I didn't know too much about the guy. Was just a Mexican, obviously very tough, hadn't been stopped in his sole defeat, had a couple decent wins. I thought we'd probably see a few rounds. Quite a big guy as well, you know, 6'3". But yeah, it was a good fight while it lasted. But, you know, Diego Pacheco did manage to get the stoppage, and it all kind of came to an end real quick. He was down from a body shot in that fourth round. It was for the WBO International and WBC USA super middleweight world titles. On the undercard, a fight that we should mention, it was a draw, a split draw over 10 rounds between Jonathan Rodriguez, now 24-2 with a draw, and Israel Gonzalez, now 28-5 with two draws. Really good fight. I think Gonzalez probably just about nicked it for me, but it was such a good fight. So many back and forth, so many momentum swings. Gonzalez going to the body almost exclusively at times, and it's a risky tactic to keep going to the body, going to the body, going to the body, hoping that it will slow your opponent down. But it did. It did slow him down, and he had success in the late rounds. But yeah, they did open scoring for the fight as well, which was quite interesting. After four rounds, I can't remember what the scores were. I think maybe one judge had one guy up and two judges had the other guy up. And then in round eight, they showed the scores again. It was only a 10-rounder. So after eight rounds, they had it. I think one judge had one fighter two rounds up. The other judge had the other fighter two rounds up. And then the other judge, the third judge, had it a draw. And those two rounds pretty much, you know, they were like one round apiece, so it ended up being a split draw, like I say. So that was that. Moving now to another part of Mexico. This one took place, I think, in a place called Metepec. This one was on, I'm not entirely sure which channel now, but anyway, Luis Neri, former world champion, now 35-1. He was able to knock out in just two rounds Froilan Saludar. So he's now 33-7 with a draw. Again, I expected a few rounds there, to be honest with you. I was quite surprised that he got him out in just two rounds. I didn't see the fight, but from what I've been told, Luis Neri picked up a serious cut in round one due to a head clash, and he decided to come out in round two and try and get it over and done with as quick as he could. Moving now to a place we don't always go to, Puerto Salvador, Allende, Managua, Nicaragua. Over here, friend of the show, he was 10-0 with 10 KOs. I think he had about 300 amateur fights, only losing about 10 of them. Ernesto Mercado, he got in with former Devin Haney opponent Zolisani Ndongani, who's now 31-3. Mercado is still undefeated. He's 11-0, but he did go the distance for the first time. He's gone 10 rounds there. The fight was one-sided. I don't think he probably lost a round, but I watched it. I managed to actually watch it on a really crystal clear stream. Going down in Nicaragua, it was kind of mad. Like, usually it's hard to get a stream that doesn't cut out for the big fights taking place in Vegas, but I was able to get a perfect stream for a fight in like what looked like a, you know, a really you know, poverty-stricken venue in Nicaragua. But anyway, all the best there to Ernesto Mercado. 10, I guess, good rounds. But yeah, you know, I expected a bit more from him. I thought he'd probably get this guy out of there. Obviously, Haney knocked him out. Oh, sorry, Haney didn't knock him out. He was knocked out in his other loss, which was to a guy who was like 10-9 or something like that. So I thought, yeah, you know, Mercado can certainly bang. He's going to hurt this guy. And yeah, at times, he did land some telling shots, but Ndongani, to his credit, I think was a bit tougher than I gave him credit for. And the one thing that really quite surprised me about Mercado is that he's a hell of a mover. When I think of a guy who's 10-0 with 10 KOs, I'm expecting this guy to be on the front foot all the time trying to get you out of there. But yeah, I felt he was very much a mover, like, you know, being very careful, you know, throwing shots from quite far out. I think his timing was good, his speed was good, but I was really impressed with his footwork, actually. You know, it's not really the type of footwork I would put with a puncher. I tend to kind of presume a puncher's going to want to hold his feet, but didn't really see that from Mercado there on Saturday night. Moving out now to the ballroom at the Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City, New Jersey, USA. We haven't spoke, Eddie, but I'm assuming you were there. Let me just touch on the undercard briefly before I come to you. On the undercard, Yoelvis Gomez, who was 6-0 with 5 KOs, he loses his a unanimous decision in favor of Marcus Taylor, who's now 15-1 with 2 draws. It was a shock to see Gomez down in round 2. Taylor only has 1 knockout win on his 15 wins, you know, column. So yeah, not known as a puncher, quite surprising to see Gomez down. Gomez, as I said on last week's show, very exciting to watch. I think can get a little bit too desperate at times, maybe a little bit, you know, tries a little bit too hard. And yeah, came unstuck here against Taylor. That was such a shock. That's honestly a huge upset there. Moving up the card as well, Edwin De Los Santos, he's now 16-1. I thought he wouldn't get Adorno out of there, and he didn't. So Adorno loses once again on points, still never been stopped, 17-3 with 2 draws. He seems to be a guy that just hasn't really been able to have the pro career that a lot of people predicted he'd have. You know, it's kind of been difficult for him to you know, run smoothly in the pros. He was a really good amateur, but he's been match tough, to be totally honest, and very tough at that. But, you know, still a tough guy, still hasn't been stopped. And yeah, De Los Santos again usually gets people out of there. I think he had 14 KOs from his 15 wins. He's gone the distance there. 10-round unanimous decision for the WBC Continental Americas lightweight title. And then the main event, Jaron Boots Ennis, now 31-0, a KO for him in round 10 against Romain Villa, now 26-2 for the IBF Interim World Welterweight title. Yeah, I'm going to just say my very, very, very short piece on it. Very impressed with Boots, you know. I think his punch selection is honestly absolutely brilliant. You know, he seems to know what punch to throw, when to throw it. This is all compliments that he's been given and really has been showered in by so many different people, so many highly respected people in the game. I'm not going to sit here and say anything that no one else has said before. But yeah, I was really impressed with what he was doing, obviously. I did think he'd knock him out. I thought he'd probably knock him out a bit sooner than round 10. I was thinking, well, maybe we're not going to see a stoppage here, but I was glad he did get him out in the end. Credit to Villa. He showed an excellent chin, obviously. I don't think he won any of the rounds at all. So the best thing I can probably say about him is that he wasn't deterred at any point. He still carried on trying to win the fight, still trying different things, and yeah, showed a heck of a chin. One thing I will say, though, is the one criticism for me is that I felt that Ennis was hit a hell of a lot. Again, Eddie, I think you were there. I don't know how close you were sitting. Obviously, at home, you get quite a good view. And from what I could see, Ennis took a hell of a lot of shots. And I was kind of thinking, wow, this isn't a good look. But look, he did also do a hell of a lot offensively as well. And I'm not going to go too hard on the lack of defense and the fact that he got hit quite a few times, because I don't really think there's much point. That was the only thing, basically, that made it not a perfect performance. But then again, is there any such thing as perfect? So, I don't know. Anyway, Eddie, give me your opinion, not just on the main event, but the undercard, if you did see any of it.
Yeah, actually, Joe, me and Steve didn't go. We actually watched it from the house. So, I did try to see some of the fight with, I can't remember the guy's name, 15-1 guy that had no knockouts and, no previous, signs of any power. But he dropped him, which kind of surprised me. But it looked to me when he dropped him like it could have either been a flash or just an off-balance kind of knockdown. So not so much there, but he got the points. And he ended up winning the fight. I didn't really see too much of it. I was trying to doing a couple things while we were at the house fixing a couple things. So we didn't get a chance to look at it, and dissect it completely. I didn't see the other fight at all. But of course, we made sure we sat down and watched Boots. And the thing that I noticed with that fight, I agree, Joe, he took a lot more chances. But he's that kind of fighter. You know what I mean? He has the ability where he can literally swim without getting wet, quoting Nazem, the great Nazem, the late great. But he still wants to be involved. He wants to be there. He wants to take shots. It seems like he wants to take shots, and because he wants to be there to give them as well. And it's not terrible, but he can literally just pitch shutouts in fights. And even though I think he still did that in these fights, he is still taking a lot of chances. And if I had one critique, just similar to what yours was, Joe, it would be to be very careful and be a little more defensively responsible and not take any too many unnecessary chances. He tends sometimes to throw a little more. He'll throw sometimes more than three at a time. And to me, that's a no-no, especially with a guy like Villa, who's a puncher, who's just sitting there waiting for an opportunity to get back into the fight. Why give him an opportunity that, he doesn't deserve? And, if you're a backer of Boots, why give him that chance? So all in all, though, superb offensive performance. There were times he showed that defensive prowess, but superb offensive performance. The punch selection was incredible. The counter punches and the counter punch selection was actually pretty nice, too. There was a couple times that he missed a few shots in the earlier rounds that I think if he would have connected with those, it would have been out a lot earlier. And once again, and also shout out to Villa, because he's tough. You could see he was kind of waiting for his opportunity to come. He kind of waiting Boots out, kind of thinking it was going to be similar to what Rashidi Ellis did. But I just think he underestimated the power that Boots has. And he felt it once he got to about round. I mean, he felt it early, but once you got to around 5 and 6, he was really starting to show the wear and tear from it. Obviously his nose was leaking pretty early, but, just the look on his face, you could start seeing the fight kind of, not necessarily coming out of him, but it was just, he was searching for things in his mind to do, and he just really couldn't find a hole. He was only thing you could hope for at that point was that puncher's chance, and sometimes that chance is just not enough. And in this case, against Boots, who I think is, a surefire superstar for the future, it wasn't going to be enough. So I think though, all in all, if there was something that he could take from it, be positive, get back in. Not everybody you're going to face is going to be, and shit, maybe not anybody else you're going to face is going to be quite like Boots. So, he could come back. But for Boots, obviously, the sky's the limit. I know he wants one of these two big guys coming up. And I don't know if that's going to be a possibility. In my opinion, I think these guys are going to, once one of them win, or, they go to do the rematch, or if they do a trilogy, whatever the situation may be, and where it turned out with them, I think they're going to eventually just go on ahead and move up and stay away from Boots at this point, because their legacy is already set and they don't want to take too many chances at it. I mean, it's one thing going against another Hall of Famer, and then rather than going against somebody who possibly can be one, and then taking a loss and giving him his flowers a little bit earlier than he should get them. So, I mean, I don't know. I think they should go on ahead and move up like they're probably going to do. And then Boots just takes over in that division afterwards. But that's exactly what I think is going to end up happening. So let's just look to the future and see what happens with these guys.
Yeah, moving out now to the AT&T Center in San Antonio, Texas, USA. Obviously a huge, huge shame to see the Virgil Ortiz, Imantis Stanionis fight cancelled once again due to Virgil Ortiz, you know, falling ill again. I think collapsed this time, and rumours that he had to be given CPR by his own father. I heard he fainted, he was rushed to the hospital and stuff like that. Obviously, I don't know if it's linked to cut him weight or not, and I'm no kind of expert when it comes to the medical side of things, but obviously extremely concerning, and obviously your health is what's most important. So you want to say something, Eddie?
Yeah, man, it's just been too many times, and I mean, I don't know any of the particulars, really. You know, obviously I wasn't there with the guy, but you know, his cutting weight thing is really, really dangerous. You know, I don't know for a fact, but you know, when you look at what's my guy? Gerald McClellan back in the day when he fought Nigel Benn. You know, that weight cut, that trying to get, you know, make sure you're on weight and all of that, and drying out, things like that, not properly rehydrating or not being able to properly rehydrate, even with a day sometimes in between. It's just, to me, it's just so dangerous. So dangerous. That's why me and my father we agreed to never fight at a weight that was going to be trying for us. You know what I'm saying? And I just think these guys need to think about that a little more. And just, I mean, I know sometimes it seems like, oh man, those guys are just too big up there. Well, you got to take no guts, no glory. You know what I mean? You got to just move up. And I think for him, with these types of things keep on happening, and you know, of course the fans want to see the fight, but man, that's just, it's dangerous. And if he had to get CPR, that's telling you something. It's time to move up.
Yeah, that's if it is related to the weight cut, which, yeah, you're 100% right if that is the case. And yeah, I mean, you know, maybe we do see him move to 154. Imagine a fully fit Virgil Ortiz getting there with someone like a Tim Sue. That's a fight no one's thought about just yet. That would be fireworks. But yeah, obviously we don't know, and hopefully we hear some more. But you know, prayers to Virgil Ortiz right now, and obviously absolutely devastated as well for Stanionis, who's kind of had his career on hold as well, and no one really seems to care too much about him because he doesn't have the medical issue. He just goes away without any sympathy, so he's getting some from me. But anyway, on this card, we did still see it go ahead. I'm going to just touch on this real briefly. Joseph Jojo Diaz, will be speaking to him a little bit later on in the show. He's now 33-4 with a draw. He bounced back after three consecutive losses with a unanimous decision, a dominating unanimous decision against Jerry Perez, now 14-3 with a draw. I'll save most of my opinions for that, for when Jojo gets here. On the undercard as well, Floyd Schofield, certainly a guy to look out for as well for the future. Built for me, in my opinion, I feel like he was built like Devin Haney. Looked absolutely huge for lightweight. He managed to go the distance, a 10-round unanimous decision against Haskell Rhodes, who's always a tough guy, now 28-5 with a draw. But Schofield, I think, is certainly one to watch in the future. I think he's only about 19, and yeah, it's a scary prospect, I tell you. He is a special fighter. I was very, very impressed. Super fit as well. I was watching him in the final round, and it was almost as if he literally just got in the ring for round one. He looked fresh as hell. And yeah, I think I'm doing this in the completely wrong order, but Marlon Esparza, she's now 14-1. It was a unification here for the WBA, WBC, and WBO flyweight female world titles. She got in there with the undefeated Gabriela Alaniz, who was 14-0 with, I think, about 6 KOs. She's a strong girl, coming off a few knockouts in a row. It ended up being a majority decision over 10 rounds to Marlon Esparza. Extremely wide scorecards in the end. Very, very disappointing to see that, actually. There was no way in the world the fight was that clear. But anyway, that was a shame, and we're going to end on that note there. But yeah, that is it, though, for the review part of the show. The final thing for me to do in this part is to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the former IBF Super Featherweight World Champion. It is, of course, Mr. Joseph Jojo Diaz. Joseph, welcome back on the show, my man.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Jojo. So we last spoke back in June of 2021, so quite a long time ago. At that time, obviously, you were getting ready to fight Javier Fortuna. You went on to win that fight, of course, which was excellent. But yeah, let's focus on what's new. And what's new is your win on the weekend over Jerry Perez. Perez is a hungry fighter with a lot of heart. You were coming off, obviously, three back-to-back defeats. I think a lot of people were unsure of what to expect from you. However, it was pleasantly surprising to see you look as good as you did. Talk me through those 10 rounds, Jojo.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry Perez, he was a solid fighter. He was strong. He was very aggressive. He applied pressure all throughout the whole fight. I kind of figured that he was going to apply pressure like that. I just did what I had to do, man. I did everything that I needed to do in training camp, which was, you know, build my endurance. So that way... people can see the old Joseph Diaz back. The best version of me is when I throw a lot of good combinations and when I apply a lot of pressure. And I was very, you know, fortunate to be in the best shape possible to actually deliver that. And I broke him down. I think that Jerry Perez looked at my past fights and he thought that I was going to do a lot of covering up and not be as open as I was. But it really shocked a lot of people. But it didn't shock me, man, because I knew that's what I'm capable of doing. When I'm at my best and when I'm 100%, I could really, you know, do some damage inside that ring. And I'm just glad and happy that, you know, I'm back and I got a W and I put on an exciting fight for the fight fans.
Yeah, you absolutely did, and you dominated, you know, pretty much the whole fight. It even looked like a stoppage was close to happening a few times. You hurt him to the head, you hurt him to the body. It's funny there, because I was actually going to say it looked like the old Jojo Diaz, and you actually said it. You took the words out of my mouth. It did look like the old Jojo Diaz.
Yeah, man, like I said, thank God I just, you know, was really, really focused, and... In my personal life had a lot to do with, you know, my past losses, just going through everything that I was going through. And thankfully, you know, with God and with the right people that on my team right now and better structure and just, you know, better vision of everything and me accepting everything that I have been through and, you know, just progressing instead of me feeling sorry for myself and always feeling down. I'm finally, you know, turning the script and just, you know, trying to be the best version of myself, not only for me, but for the fans and, you know, for the end of my career, but also for my family that I got going on as well, my future family.
And obviously we have to discuss the weight. It was reported you came in 6 pounds overweight. It's obviously not the first time you've came in overweight, so boxing fans will find you guilty before you even give an explanation. But how did you miss the weight so bad, Jojo?
Yeah, well, I missed the weight, man, because I was still battling with alcohol addiction, man. After the Mercita Hesta fight, I went on a really bad turnaround where I was really, really depressed. I thought I won the fight, but I knew that I could have did a lot better, but I messed my hand up in the third round, and it was because of, you know, the decision of me making choosing a certain glove that messed up my hand and stuff, and it just kind of, you know, just made me in a bad mental state and made me depressed, especially losing three times in a row. And the two losses that I lost back to back with Mercita Hesta and William Cepeda, I truly believe I'm way better than those fighters. So just me knowing that made me, you know, depressed, and I was, you know, drinking a lot, and I gained a lot of weight, man. You know, alcohol is a type of drug that it makes you feel good and it makes you feel okay, but it makes you, you know, miss a training for a few days, and it holds on to a lot of unnecessary fat and holds on to a lot of sugars because of that. And that's what happened to me, man. I gained a lot of weight, but I tried to lose it, and I lost as much as I can. But I didn't want to, you know, really, really deplete myself, because I still wanted to showcase to everybody my true talents. And I was able to only make it to 141, But like I said, since I cut everything out and since I'm on the right path, I'm on the road to 135, and that's going to be the fight. That's going to be my fight weight for my next fight, 135.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you were going to be going, you know, back down to lightweight and staying there. You've already said that you'll be boxing again in just 60 days. There seems to be a real purpose about your attitude right now. What is that purpose? What's the main reason your next fight is only just weeks away?
It's because I want to, you know, become a world title. I want to have a world title on my waist, and I want to showcase to everybody that, you know, I'm not taking this shit lightly anymore. Also I want to, you know, give myself the pleasure of just sticking to what I'm best at and making sure that I'm doing what I need to do to, you know, be inside that ring again, because I want to get that 135-pound title, and I want to make sure that I build a foundation for not only myself but for my kids.
And I know you probably can't say who you'll be fighting right now, but do you yourself know who your opponent will be just yet?
No. As of right now, I'm still unaware. I talked to Golden Boy and my manager, Rick Mirigan, regarding this on Monday. And I got some good news, but no opponent yet. I know Jorge Linares has called me out, and Bernard Hopkins wanted me to fight Kid Austin, but I don't want to fight Kid Austin yet, man, because it's a lose-lose for me, man. If I go out there and beat the shit out of Kid Austin, people are going to say that he was inexperienced and, he was somebody that I was supposed to beat. But the guy like Jorge Linares, he's a bigger name, and that's the guy that I would like to fight next. But like I said, I trust in, you know, Rick Mirigan, and I trust in Golden Boy Promotions, and I know that they're going to structure me to get the biggest fight possible.
And obviously, you ended 2021 on a loss. You had one fight in 2022, which was the loss. And then obviously, the year 2023, obviously, you picked up the loss against Gesta. Because of that, 2023 can't really be a get-back year. But it does seem like you're determined to at least end the year on a high. Obviously, you started that on Saturday night in San Antonio. Realistically, where do you hope to be by the end of this calendar year? So by the end of December, Jojo?
By the end of December, I want to be in the top five again at the 135-pound weight class, I want to make sure that I build that structure where beginning of 2024, I'm fighting for a 135-pound world title.
And are there any names on your hit list? I know, obviously, you mentioned there Linares probably makes more sense right now. I agree. But is that the only name at the top of your list?
No, man. I mean, I want to fight the best. I've always wanted to fight the best in my career. And like I said, right now, I feel like I'm more mentally focused and more mentally determined where I know what I want. And I know that I'm going to deliver the best fight. So I want to fight the best fighters out there, man. I want to fight Shakur Stevenson. I want to fight Isaac Cruz. I want a rematch with Devin Haney, hopefully. I want a rematch with William Cepeda. I want all these big names, man. I want all these big names because it's a part of my legacy. And I want to, these next few fights, I know that it's, you know, it's almost the end of my career. I'm 30 years old, but I want to make sure that, you know, I really mark my name inside the legacy books.
And Jojo, you recently came out on social media and confessed to having an issue with alcohol. Firstly, I applaud your bravery to come out and admit that to your thousands and thousands of followers. It's obviously not an easy thing to do. I wanted to ask Joe, when did you first start drinking? Like, at what age?
I started drinking when I was really young. I think I believe I started drinking when I was about 15, 16 years old, man. So alcohol has been in my life for a long time, but back then I was able to control it. I mean, I was able to, you know, drink and then, you know, go a few days without it and then start training again and focus and all that stuff. But the later it got, the more I started drinking, the more I started partying, the more, you know, I started getting into that lifestyle, and it started, you know, becoming like reliant on it. I started becoming reliant on it, and I started, you know, becoming like I needed it. And it got to the point, man, where I was drinking, you know, every single day. And I'm a Mexican American type of person, man. So when I drink, I like to drink. It's not like I don't like to drink only one beer or anything like that. I can't do that. It's not in me or anything like that. So when I do drink, it's a lot of drinking, man. So I started realizing that I wasn't drinking to have fun anymore. Before, back then, when I was 16, 15, 17 years old, and 23, 24 years old, I was drinking to have fun. I was drinking to socialize. I was drinking to, you know, enjoy myself, enjoy my victories and stuff. But the later I got, the more trauma that has occurred in my life, where I wasn't drinking to have fun anymore. I was drinking to, you know, to feel sorry for myself, to make me feel good, to make me feel good about, like, just about myself and stuff like that, and make me feel, because I was always sad and I was always depressed. And that's when I started, you know, really, like, realizing it. And I looked in the mirror, man, one day, and I see myself, and I was, you know, fat, I was hungover, and I was really, really bad. And I was just like, man, like, this is not the fucking person that I know I am. This is something that, you know, has occurred, that has affected me, and that it was the depression and everything that I've been through made me that way. And I started, you know, praying to God. I started being opening up to myself. And I think that's the first thing that people have to do when they do have an alcohol problem or when they have any type of addiction problem. I think what they have to do first is look in the mirror and accept it within themselves. Because if you can't accept it within yourself, then you're not going to be able to get the proper help, because you're always going to, you know, neglect it, or you're always going to, you know, shy away from it, or you're always going to try to, when somebody tells you something or somebody says that you're this and that, you're going to get mad and you're going to get upset about it. And I think that's what made me, you know, really, really change, was knowing and accepting the fact that was me. And I started, you know, talking to my parents. I talked to my girlfriend, and I just accepted it, dude. I accepted everything, because I wanted to change, not only for myself, but for everybody around me. Because I know with alcohol, it affects everybody around you, dude. And with my career, I'm a fighter and I'm a professional, where I could change a lot of lives. I could affect a lot of lives, and I could change a lot of lives. And I know that if I really, you know, cut this out and fight the fight that I need to, my life and everybody around it can change. And that's what I'm doing now, man. I'm really, you know, focused on, you know, not feeling sorry for myself anymore, but just becoming the best version of myself. So that way I could, you know, be the best version, not only for me, but for my son, for my girlfriend, for my family. I want to be the best version for everybody around me, and I want to be a positive influence.
And Jojo, I know obviously there's a lot to say on the drinking. I wanted to ask, if you know this, was there a point in your life that you're able to identify that was the moment your drinking started to intensify? That was the moment where it became an addiction? And if so, if you do know at what point in your life it was, what was the reason for that?
You know what? I think it had to do with many reasons, man. I think one was because, you know, my ex business people that I was dealing with, you know, really try to, you know, fuck me over, fuck my life over, and, you know, try to ruin my career and ruin my reputation by trying to slander my name. And also just well, me not being around my son as well, man. Not being around my son fully really affects me as well, knowing that I can't be there for him, or I can't see him and stuff like that. That's what really makes me, that's what really triggers me too, man, because my son is my everything and I love him with all my heart. So whenever I do think about that, it kind of makes me sad and depressed. But I started realizing all that stuff, and I started, you know, really paying attention to it. And I was like, man, like, fuck my ex-business partners. Like, it really doesn't matter if they're trying to like ruin my career and stuff like that. If they're going to try to ruin my career, it's okay, man. I can't please everybody. I got to just do what's best for myself and for my son. Like me drinking with when he's not around me and stuff like that, that is, you know, disrespecting him and disrespecting me as well, because I could be a better person and I could do a lot of positive things when he's not around, and really change, you know, all of our lives around, if I just, you know, remain focused and remain sober and stuff like that. So that right there, once I started, you know, really realizing that, I mean, it's still a battle, man. Every day, I'm not saying that it's easy or anything like that. Every day is still a battle, but now that I'm able to be aware, now that I'm able to have more structure and understanding of it, I'm able to, you know, overcome the battles and the tests and like the temptations a lot better.
News broke a few months back that you'd been arrested for child neglect. No one really knew what had happened. We've all seen your son. He's a super cute kid. When I've seen you in the presence of your son, you look like a fantastic dad. What happened for that to occur, Jojo? What can you tell us? And was it in any way alcohol related?
You know what? I don't like to speak on that subject because there's still ongoing cases going on, and I don't have the 50-50, you know, custody that I want to have. So I don't want to talk on that subject yet, but I know that everybody knows how much I love my son, and I love my son with all my heart as well. And I'm taking all the right steps to be a part of his life. And the thing that makes me, you know, keep going, and the thing that makes me, you know, really, really happy is me knowing that, and me showing my son how much I love him, because my son, me showing my son the love is the most thing, is the most thing that cares about me the most. And I just want him to know that, and I'm going to continue to fight for him, and later on, when all this is all said and done, when he gets older and stuff, he's going to honestly see that I fought for him and see that, you know, I changed and I'm a better person, all because I wanted to be a part of his life.
Exactly. And it's fantastic that you have something that you value so much to be able to kind of, you know, pull you out of that hole that you can get in. You know, when you're low, you need to remember about the things that mean the most to you. And it's fantastic that you feel that way about your son. It's the best thing you can have. You're at a point now where you're clean. How long have you been clean, Joe? And how were you able to stop as well?
I've been clean for, I would say, about 6 months now, man. But I've been clean from all the drugs, man, because there was one point in my life where I was, you know, smoking weed. I was freaking doing all these other drugs, all these party drugs and all these other stuff where, like, my mind was just, like, really, really messed up, man. I really got into that lifestyle, and it was, like, really suckering me up, man. But I'm very, very fortunate that I've been off of marijuana and off of all the other drugs for about almost a year now, man. I really was able to, you know, fight that urge and know what I really want. And the alcohol is the toughest part of the battle, but every single day I'm still battling it, but I'm getting better, and I know that I'm getting better, and I'm acknowledging that, and I'm accepting it, and I'm going to overcome it, man. I'm going to overcome it just like I overcome the losses that were in my boxing career. I changed the whole script, and that's what I'm doing now. I'm changing the whole script around of my whole life in general, not just my boxing career.
I'm really proud of you, Jojo, and it's fantastic to hear that. My last question on that kind of stuff, I was just going to ask, obviously you said there that you've been clean for 6 months. I'm going to assume you probably weren't in the gym the entire 6 months. So I was going to say, was it slightly easier to give up drinking because you were going into a training camp, you knew that you had a fight date in mind and stuff like that, and is it now going to be a bit harder to combat the drinking because obviously you don't have an opponent locked in? I know you're fighting in just 60 days, but no, is that not a struggle now?
No, it still is a struggle. It still is a struggle, but like right now, I'm just thankful that I have my girlfriend right by my side, and I have a good team and a good support system, and me just being open to everybody now too. I feel like that is helping me be, you know, as strong as I possibly can for not only myself but for my career. I know that this is, you know, I've lost 3 consecutive losses, and I just got my victory again this past Saturday, and I want to stay on the right path, man. I want to showcase, and I just want to be the best fighter, man, because I know that when I'm really, really focused and when I'm really, really hungry and when I'm really determined, no one can beat me inside that ring. No one. No one. No one in this world, not even the biggest name, can beat me when I'm at my best. And I just want to prove that. I want to prove that because I want to, you know, be a success story. And I want to not only be a success story, but I want to be, you know, a child of God where I'm able to change a lot of people's lives and motivate a lot of people to, you know, overcome their struggles, overcome their battles, overcome their depression, and, you know, just be a light to all the people that are watching me and that are tuned in.
And I love hearing you say that, man, because, you know, I've followed your career from the beginning, obviously. You've had so many ups and downs. I feel like you've had so much pressure on you at times in your career. And obviously, throughout all of that, you still have a massive platform. You're still young enough to turn it all around. And obviously, if you can use that platform, you know, to inspire others, you can actually use this to inspire thousands of people. And honestly, you're so much more powerful than you probably even can realize. I just want to say before we close it up, Jojo, if you've got any closing words just to the listeners, it's always great having you on. Whenever we have an interview, it always seems to go extremely deep. It's great having you on. If you want to just close out with a final message, say whatever you like, my man.
Yeah, to everybody that is, you know, tuned in and that has been supporting me throughout my life and my career, I just want to, you know, thank you guys, and I just want to, you know, let you guys know that I'm doing better. I'm back to normal, and I'm fighting every day to, you know, be the best fighter, be the best father, be the best husband, and being the best son and fighter that I possibly can for everybody. And I want to be the light, and I want to, you know, let everybody know that if you guys are battling any type of, you know, addiction, depression, make sure that you guys go and seek help, man, because that really does, you guys are not alone. And I know that a lot of people, their ego and their, you know, their mind is set to think that people are always judging them, or people that are, that nobody is going to understand them, but it's always good just to have an open ear, and it's always good to just be expressive about it, because once you're able to express it, it's more of a relief in your mind and in your body, and you could be a lot better and you can overcome. And I just, like I said, I'm overcoming every single day, and you guys are going to see me back in 60 days. And if you guys were very impressed with my performance last Saturday, you guys are going to be more impressed with how I look in 60 days, man. And thank you guys all again for you guys' support, and I'll see you guys soon.
There we go. I absolutely cannot wait. 60 days, not a long time. We can't wait to see you again. Listen, Jojo, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you again, my man. Thanks for your time. Stay strong, and we'll speak again soon enough.
Thank you, brother. You take care.
Okay, now it's time for part 2 on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start here with this one. A rematch, of course, between Anthony Joshua and Dillian White. That one to land at the O2 Arena in London, August the 12th. The date, live on DAZN pay-per-view. I've got mixed feelings on this fight, to be totally honest, Eddie. I don't know how you feel. Obviously, Anthony Joshua, you know, he's used Deontay Wilder's name a hell of a lot. They're talking about that fight to take place perhaps in December of this year. I'm fine with that. If that's going to go ahead and he's just fighting Dillian White as some kind of keep busy fight, then yeah, Dillian White is an extremely good keep busy fight for anyone in the world. I mean, wow. Like, credit to Joshua for taking that fight as a keep busy fight if he does end up fighting Wilder. If for whatever reason he doesn't end up fighting Wilder, then I'm going to look back at this fight and be quite annoyed because, you know, I think he boxed Dillian White when he was pretty much, you know, a bit of a novice. He went on to be a lot better than that first fight, and therefore I'm not too bothered about seeing the rematch. However, I don't think Joshua, you know, I think he got better, then slightly regressed a little bit. Dillian White's probably got a little bit better, but again, I think he's, you know, he's on the way down the slide as well. But yeah, I'm not really excited about it. I think it's. I'd be very surprised if Joshua knocked him out early. I think it definitely goes late. And this time, actually, I could even see it going the distance. Whereas, obviously, the first time, even though Joshua was a bit of a novice, managed to get the stoppage.
Yeah. Things are definitely different now. I mean, Dillian obviously has more experience, you know, he's been to a high level. Obviously, Joshua has been a champion, but we've seen Joshua recently, you know, go through trying times and have tough fights, you know, with Usyk and obviously the situation with Andy Ruiz. But, you know, it's a different time now. Like I said, Dillian has gotten better. In a lot of ways, and more experience, he's been through a couple of things. It's interesting, again, because of that. It's, you know, these guys have obviously fought once, and you kind of seen how it ended. Even though Dillian like hurt him in the fight, and you know he was in it to a degree, it's still, you know, you still kind of expected. It was the expected outcome, so to speak. So, interesting fight. You know what I mean? And like you said, if it's a keep busy fight for Wilder, 100% I'll take it. And if we got an upset in that, it would make things even more interesting. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I know the upset would kind of upset the apple cart with the old Wilder thing maybe. But, yeah, I'm still interested and still want to see it.
Yeah, all the best to both guys, you know. Friend of mine, you know, friend of the show as well, Michael Hunter, he's been sparring Anthony Joshua out there in Dallas, Texas, in preparation for this fight with Dillian White. And yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how Joshua looks as well with his new trainer, Derek James, in his corner. I'm going to assume Derek James has to come over here for that fight. You know, he has to. He's got to be in the corner. It's his first fight with Joshua. I'm sure he has to be in the corner, has to pick up that nice percentage of the pay packet, even though it's going to be during an extremely important time. It's just after the... It's just after the Spence and Crawford fight, of course. So, yeah, I take that back. It's after that fight. I thought it was just before for some mad reason, even though that would have been, like, next week. Don't know what's wrong with me sometimes. moving on to the next piece of news. Obviously, it's a fight that's been announced as well. It's going to be taking place in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Over here, we're going to see... I'm going to assume it's on pay-per-view. It has to be, obviously. Tyson Fury defending his WBC heavyweight world title against Francis Ngannou, who's obviously a UFC fighter. In fact, I'm not entirely sure it is actually for a belt. Like, I don't know if... Is he actually allowed to put his WBC title on the line for this fight? If he is, then that's... I don't like that. I really don't. Obviously... Hell of a lot of MMA UFC fans will be tuning in, hoping that their guy can land, you know, the punch of a lifetime against Fury and stop him. And that would be so embarrassing for the sport of boxing. I know why he's opted for this fight, Eddie. You know, he's capturing the imagination here, obviously. It's a cash grab, in my opinion. You know, he's fighting a guy here who's not a boxer. And obviously, if you say, oh, well, you know, Francis Ngannou's a real big puncher. Well, not as a boxer. He might be a big puncher in the cage. And also, I wouldn't mind betting he's definitely not as hard a puncher as Deontay Wilder. And Deontay Wilder couldn't keep Fury on the floor in three fights. So I think Ngannou has absolutely no chance at all. I'm really excited to see what the odds are going to be saying. But yeah, you know, we both, obviously, you're a good friend of Fury's. I'm a huge fan of Fury's. But it's frustrating for the hardcore boxing fans, these type of fights, Eddie. But again, I can understand he's going to make a lorry load of money.
Yeah. It's, you know, Tyson, I like the idea of bringing more attention to boxing. And like you said, recently, you with UFC guys have had their hand in boxing a lot more because obviously they can get paid more per fight. So especially if they're popular, you know, obviously, you know, at the bottom, you know, you're not going to get the same kind of payments as guys at the top. So, you know, it's a good idea. If you got a good following in MMA, you know, kind of like Ngannou does, you know, like you said, he's capturing the imagination of most of the MMA guys. Oh, he's a big puncher. He's going to knock, he could possibly knock Tyson out. You know, he's a huge, huge puncher, but I was just having this conversation with somebody yesterday about him as a puncher and MMA versus a puncher, you know, a puncher with 4-ounce gloves on, with hand wraps, you know, with a cast on your hand, basically, and then 4-ounce gloves on. I mean, and then 8 to 10-ounce gloves on in boxing. Total different story. I'm not saying that he couldn't. He can't punch, but it's just a different thing altogether. Boxers tend to have, you know, better the ability to defend a little bit better because they don't have to think about kicks and all that. All they're thinking about is punches. The nuances of boxing. They're obviously a lot better at it than a guy like Ngannou would be. Obviously, also thinking that he's a great puncher as he is, I'm not saying he's not, but we're talking about him versus Wilder's right hand. Wilder's right hand could knock anyone out, and we're talking about with 10-ounce gloves on. Could you imagine putting 4-ounce MMA gloves on Wilder and saying, okay, go hit him? He might put some people in the hospital for real. You know what I'm saying? So it's I don't think he's the puncher that, and obviously too, it goes into IQ and when to land the punches, when to throw the punches, you know, how you throw the punches. Even though we agree that Wilder's not the most skilled boxer in the world, he still has enough of an IQ and an understanding of how to land that right hand. So it's just a total different thing when you're bringing a guy from the cage to the ring. Guys have had, you know, small success before with it, but they've been more into boxing than this Ngannou kid is. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, it's an interesting fight because, you know, you're bringing an MMA guy into an elite level boxing match here with one of the top fighters in the world, maybe ever. It's kind of crazy that we're even talking about this because this would never have been allowed in the past. And this is why a lot of old school fighters are looking at this generation saying, what the hell is this? These guys aren't really what they should be. And it makes it a little hard for guys now, but hey, you got to make that money. At the end of the day, your legacy is something that you live off to with the fans, but you can't eat legacy. So, I understand that Tyson has to do this. It's going to make him a lot of money. And, you know, hopefully it doesn't tarnish, you know, boxing's legacy too much. You know what I mean? So I still look forward to it. I still kind of want to see what happens. But we pretty much know where this is going to go.
And lastly, the last piece of news is that Nonito Donaire, Alexandro Santiago, that one was going to be taking place this weekend, but that fight has now been pushed back to now go on the Spence Crawford undercard for obviously July 29th. And that's now as well going to be for the vacant WBC bantamweight world title. So, I'm not opposing that at all. Really happy for Nonito Donaire to fight again for a world title. Moving now, though, to the preview part of the show. We took up a bit of time there on the news. Let's start here tomorrow night at the Hangar Events venue in Wolverhampton, West Midlands, United Kingdom. Over here, the rematch between Ayaz Ahmed, 10-2 with 3 draws. He gets back in with Marcel Braithwaite, 15-3 with a draw. This one's for the vacant British super flyweight title. Both guys obviously in an immediate rematch. last time out, Marcel Braithwaite, I think, clearly won the fight. Even the commentary team, who admitted to being biased, saying that they want Ahmed to win. They were completely not hiding their bias, but they did both agree. There was two of them. They both agreed that the right man that should win is Braithwaite. I think it was Terry O'Connor with yet another horrendous scorecard that ended up costing Marcel Braithwaite the victory. And yeah, in the end, like I say, ended up being a draw. It was an awful, awful decision. And Braithwaite clearly won. Braithwaite, again, completely not a puncher. Ahmed, not really a puncher either. but does have a really good work rate and is very fit. Again, I'd expect pretty much the exact same fight. Marcel Braithwaite to win on points. I think that's the bet, and I think you can double your money on that as well, by the way. Shame, though, that this time it's not for the Commonwealth title as well. That one's not on the line here. It was last time, but they have got the British back on the line, which is good. Moving now to this one. It goes down on Saturday at the Teatro Maggiore in Verbania, Piemonte, Italy. I need to work on my Italian accent, I think. But over here, we see the return to the ring of Spaniard Sandor Martin, 40-3, coming off that controversial points loss to Teofimo Lopez. Isn't it crazy? Most people thought he won the fight. He kind of went away, didn't fight. Teofimo Lopez went straight in with Josh Taylor for a world title, beat Josh Taylor, retired, and then I think just yesterday came back out of retirement. So Sandor Martin gets his first fight since then, even though really he shouldn't be coming off a loss in most people's opinions. But yeah, 40-3, he's in an 8-rounder against Arblin Kaba, who's 15-3 with a draw. I think he's been stopped one or two times in his 3 losses and hasn't boxed nowhere near the level of Sandor Martin. Sandor Martin is expected to win this on points, but again, I wouldn't be surprised if he got a stoppage, but he's not really a guy that likes to press for a stoppage, unfortunately. But the mismatch in levels is so high here. Moving now to this one as well, it goes down actually on DAZN, so I'm guessing that the Sauerlands must have done some kind of broadcast deal with DAZN. But anyway, Saturday night at the Virtu Motors Arena in Newcastle at Tyne and Wear, United Kingdom over here. Few fights on the undercard to mention, obviously British fighters. But the two main events that I'm going to mention, this one for the vacant super featherweight British title, we're going to see Kez Ashfaq, 12-1. He gets in with Liam Dillon, who's 12-0 with a draw. I think it's an interesting fight, and I think actually it could be really, really good to watch. Ashfaq seemed like to have the most confusing, hardest to follow pro career when he turned over. Was a good amateur, turned over. I think he signed with David Hay, never ended up fighting under David Hay, was in a crazy contract, managed to get out without even fighting. Then he ended up on this card, on this card, on this card. He's been on pretty much every promoter's undercards, but has really struggled to find any kind of momentum. Suffered a loss to Mark Leach, even though I think Mark Leach is a good fighter and there's no real shame in that loss. But many people felt Ashfaq would be dominating at this kind of level. He'd be flying up the ranks. But anyway, gets in with Liam Dillon, who again has beaten a few decent fighters as well. So I think it's a tough fight here. It's going to be interesting. It's over 12 rounds, of course. But the main event is where all the eyes will go. We're going to see Josh Kelly, friend of the show, 13-1 with a draw, coming off that excellent performance last time out when he was able to completely dominate. God, I can't believe it. His name's completely slipped me. Troy Williamson, friend of the show, yeah, completely dominated him. I think Troy Williamson as well, if I'm not mistaken, has managed to get himself on the undercard last minute against a guy who's a journeyman, but I think the guy's had 22 losses, only been stopped once, so I'm expecting Troy to win that fight on points, though I can't remember the guy's name. But anyway, back to what I was saying, Josh Kelly does get in with a decent fighter if you're looking at his record, 18-0, only 3 KOs, but like I say, never been beaten. His nickname is El Terrible. A lot of people have that. I think they steal it from Eric Morales. But yeah, 28 years of age, from Argentina. You look through the record, obviously they're all wins, but they're all against guys who I completely don't recognize and guys who don't have the prettiest of records. So you never really know. These are the type of fighters that there's, you know, it's very hard to find tape on. So you don't know, the guy could be really good and just no one knows about him, or the guy could be absolutely useless and have a very padded record. I would lean towards the latter being true, and hopefully Josh Kelly will be able to win this fight. I'd be quite surprised if he didn't win, but this guy is an unknown quantity, and Josh Kelly, I'm not entirely sure if he'll win on points or by stoppage, so yeah, I wouldn't really want to go too heavy on either of those. Moving out now to this one here, we're coming down to the final two cards. This one goes down at the Masonic Temple in Detroit, Michigan, USA. It's on DAZN as well. Pro debut for Andy Cruz. It's going to be fantastic to see Andy Cruz fight, by the way. This is a guy who has absolutely everyone's respect from the amateurs, you know. One-time gold medalist. He won a gold medal in the 2020 Olympics. I was going to say two-time world amateur champion, but in fact I think he's actually got 3 gold medals in the worlds, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, amateur boxing's certainly not my strongest point. But anyway, he makes his debut in a 10-rounder here for the vacant IBF International Lightweight title. They're wasting absolutely no time with him. He steps in with the extremely tough Juan Carlos Burgos. As soon as this fight got made, I was really, really happy to see it had been made. I'd have hoped that the odds on Andy Cruz to win on points would have been a little bit better than what they are, so I don't think there's much to get involved in there, unfortunately. You cannot ask for a tougher fight on your pro debut. Burgos is extremely tough, like I say, never been stopped. 7 losses have come to Keyshawn Davis, Javier Martinez, Starlin Castillo, Hector Tanahara, Devin Haney, Mikey Garcia, Hozumi Hasegawa. None of these guys have ever stopped him. Obviously, he's more known for his losses than his wins, unfortunately, but he's been competitive in all of those losses, I will say, as well. It's not like anyone absolutely whitewashes him. So to take him on your debut is just crazy, actually, over 10 rounds for a title as well. So it's going to be just great to see the pro career unfold for Andy Cruz. Moving up the card once again, Jermaine Franklin, 21-2. It's good to see him out again, and it's also on an Eddie Hearn show, so maybe he's got some kind of decent relationship going with Eddie Hearn. He's obviously coming off 2 back-to-back defeats against Dillian White, which was questionable, and against Anthony Joshua. Again, both guys went the distance with him. He gets in with an undefeated fighter called Isaac Munoz Gutierrez, who's 17-0 with a draw, 14 KOs from Mexico, 6'2". Again, you look through his record, no names I recognize. Jermaine Franklin, I think, is a lot better than people think he is at the moment. Obviously went the distance, like I say, with Joshua and Dillian White, but you know, perhaps those guys, well, I'm not going to say Dillian White's superior to him, because a lot of people felt he won that fight, but Anthony Joshua is obviously a bit superior to him. But even there, that was quite a bad performance from Joshua, and I think it had something to do with Franklin. I think Franklin is quite a good fighter, you know, and I think I would expect him to get a knockout here, actually, against this undefeated fighter. So that's how highly I rate him. Hopefully he performs. And then, yeah, the main event, obviously, it's a homecoming for Alicia Baumgartner. She's now 14-1 currently. She might be 15-1, getting a bit ahead of myself there. But she gets in with Christina Linadartu, who's 14-2. It's for the IBF, IBO, WBA, WBC, and WBO female super featherweight world titles. Obviously, it's a rematch. Linadartu is the lady that inflicted the sole defeat on Alicia Baumgartner's record. That one was back in 2018, back in July 2018, so literally 5 years ago this month. Since then, obviously, Baumgartner seems to, you know, have improved a hell of a lot. I still think it's going to be a really good fight. It was a split decision back then, and it was only an 8-rounder. So here it's a 10. But yeah, Linadartu, obviously in that time, you know, beaten a couple of undefeated ladies. Stepped in with Katie Taylor. Lost to Katie Taylor in a decent fight. She gave her quite a good fight. I think she's a good fighter, and I think it's going to be tough. But yeah, I would expect Baumgartner to probably win on points, especially the fact it's in her hometown. And then, yeah, moving to the final card to mention, it goes down at the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA. It's going to be live on Showtime. 2 fights to mention on this one here. Let's start with the undercard. A really good fight here, actually. A really good fight. And I actually, this for me is one of the kind of under the radar fights of the weekend. It's the kind of fight that gets my attention and not many other people's attention. But this is the one I like on the card. Elvis Rodriguez, 14-1 with a draw. Obviously 12 KOs, coming off a win last time out against Joseph Adorno, who we mentioned earlier on in the show. Obviously won by majority decision, had him down twice in the fight but couldn't stop him. The one loss came to Kenny Sims Jr., who is a friend of the show, but this guy is a good fighter and he can certainly bang. He gets in with Victor Postol, who again I think is one of the most unappreciated fighters at super lightweight, and has been for years and years. such a unlucky guy. You know, I felt he actually beat Jose Carlos Ramirez when he boxed Jose Ramirez. I thought he should have won that fight, lost a majority decision. Then he came off a year and a half out with all the Ukraine-Russia war going on, come back, boxed Gary Antoine Russell, and it was complete BS the way that they gave Russell a TKO in the 10th and final round when it was not going to come. There was 30 seconds left in the fight. He wasn't in trouble at all. The referee was horrendous for actually giving the stoppage to Russell, which obviously extended his 100% knockout streak, which was just criminal. So I don't count that as a knockout. So in my opinion, Victor Postol's never been knocked out. He gets in with Elvis Rodriguez. Like I say, good fighter, but I think this goes the distance. I don't think Rodriguez will knock him out. If he does, I'll be very surprised and very impressed. You know, like I say, if Gary Antoine Russell can't knock you out when he's banged out absolutely everyone and better fighters than Elvis Rodriguez has, if he can't do that when you've had a year and a half out of the ring, I don't think you're going to be able to do that when he's only had 5 months out of the ring and you're not as good as Gary Antoine Russell. That's just my opinion. And I would not be surprised. I mean, Victor Postol hasn't shown us much now for a couple of years because he's coming off two back-to-back defeats, even though I felt he beat Ramirez, but that even was 3 years ago. So I don't know what he's got left, but I tell you what, if this was a couple of years before, I would definitely say that he could upset the odds here and win a points decision. I'm going to say it goes the distance. That's my bet, but I think either man can win this one on points. I wouldn't count out Victor Postol. I certainly wouldn't count him out at all. And yeah, the main event, Frank Martin, 17-0. He gets in with Artem Haratyanyan. Haratyanyan, who is 12-0. I don't know much about this guy. Obviously, I think that's clear to see. I can't even correctly say the guy's name. But yeah, he actually beat a Spanish fighter called Samuel Molina, who I tipped to do big things. He actually took his own, knocked him out back in 2021. So what I will say is that he's probably not too bad a fighter, but that is about all I can say. Frank Martin, on the other hand, obviously ticking a lot of boxes, was able to beat Michelle Rivera last time out, take his O. I think that was quite big. Beat Jackson Marinez, beat Romero Duno. So yeah, for me, you'd have to side with him. But what I will say is that it's probably going to be a good fight. And I wouldn't be surprised if this one went the distance as well. I think there's value in a Frank Martin 2-1 points decision, but that's just my very uneducated opinion when it comes to these two guys, to be perfectly honest. That's all I can be. But anyway, that wraps up the preview part of the show. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest, the main man, Mr. Joseph Jojo Diaz. In part two, we did the news. We've just wrapped up the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 404 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the former IBF Super Featherweight World Champion, Mr. Joseph Jojo Diaz. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. There has been just one piece of news break whilst we've been recording the show, and it's that Jared Big Baby Anderson, or the real Big Baby Anderson, will be boxing again. He'll be taking on Andre Rodenko. That's to take place in Tulsa at the Hard Rock. That's going to be on August 26th. Rodenko, obviously not a fantastic fighter, 39 years of age, but very durable. Only been stopped the one time, and that was in December of 2021. He's had one fight since then. He knocked out a guy in two rounds who was 2-10, and yeah, gets straight in with Jared Big Baby Anderson. Obviously in the past gone the distance with Povetkin, gone the distance with Ajit Kabayel, gone the distance with Zilly Zhang, gone the distance with Lucas Brown, gone the distance with Huey Fury, but obviously all those guys he lost to. But anyway, that's about everything from myself, though. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again next week.